I'm Jared Waitley. Here's a snapshot of Wednesday, June 7. We digested the stunning unification of golf as the PGA Tour and LIV merged.
Hey, Jared, I'm just wondering, do you think the tipping point for the PGA was Brooks Koepka obviously being from LIV Golf and winning that last major tournament? I don't know if you watched every round there, Jared, but there was a lot of tension on Michael Block. Obviously, okay, he was the pro there, you know, of the club there, but while Koepka was shooting some amazing rounds, all the attention was on block, and even when Koepka won, everything went to Block. I was just wondering that whole attention on just him took away from Koepka actually winning another major, and I think that might have been a tipping point, don't you think, Jared?
This is similar to the automotive industry that America has suffered. Firstly, they believed that the West Coast and the East Coast were the only places that could make proper cars, and all of a sudden it disappeared. In relation to that, excellent summary this morning, but the one person you did not name, and not one name has not appeared, is Greg Norman. Now, at the press conference in the US, Norman's name was not mentioned. I get the feeling that he's been squeezed out.
Luke Hodge gave a wonderful insight into the selfless nature of Lance Franklin in the 2013 Premiership campaign.
When Bud left and went to Sydney, the reason why you did not hear one bad word said about Buzz was about how he put his teammates first in the last two games he did for our football club. So the prelim final against Fremantle in 2013, he had McFarlane and he came in. The prelim final against Geelong. He had Lonergan. It was the Kennett curse. We hadn't beaten him since 2008. He came into the leadership meeting and said, "I've got Lonergan. Why don't I play him up the field? He's more Bud was more athletic than Lonergan. Deep, probably played into Lonergan's hands. And a selfless role like that in a pretty big game, knowing that you were pretty much going to leave after if we lost, you're out the door either way. So he put the team first, played up the ground. He only kicked one goal, but I think we had Gunston kicked four, Haley kicked two, Shawnee Burger might have kicked him with two or three, but it was the mindset of Bud on such a big stage, putting the teammate first. And then the next week was the grand final against Prelim. And the same thing happened. Everyone on grand final day wants to play well, especially if Ford wants to kick a heap of goals. Once again, knowing that he was going to Sydney the next year. And he came straight in, he said, "I'm going to have McFarlane." He goes, "Deep down, he's probably just as strong, just as fast as me in the Ford 50. Why don't I play him outside the Ford line as I did the week before?" And once again, his teammates got the reward. Gunston almost got the Norm Smith kick four. Once again, I think we had five or six Ford line players that kicked goals, all because Bud played that selfless role and put himself out of the view of kicking goals. And not many people look at that. A lot of people sit back and go, "Oh, he played a part of the team," but it was his decision for the two biggest games, especially after we were getting touted as chokers. We lost the prelim to Collingwood in 2011, lost the grand final to Sydney in 2012. So people were touting the Hawthorn Football Club as chokers and our group as chokers. For him to put us before himself in those two biggest games, it says a lot about him. So when he did end up making the decision to go to Sydney, there's not been one bad word spoken about him, because deep down, you know that he's a team player, and he put us before himself in those big games.
Steve O'Keefe on the World Test Championship final between Australia and India.
I think it's something that the players want to get their hands on, is that mace. I do as well remember the fanfare that New Zealand got when they went home. A friend of mine, Will Somerville, had played in a couple of tests during that 2 years and got to travel around to schools. And I think it really does showcase the talent, or as we've said over the last 2 years, how well Australia's been playing cricket. Playing in a neutral venue, I guess the next part of the analysis is, you know, who does it favour? Because as we've seen, India's been really dominant in outside of India. They've had a two-all draw series during the COVID test series where they had to play the last test, I think, after a long delay to fit that in a two-all draw. And I think you ask most people, you'd say Australia might have their noses in front. I might be a bit contrarian. I think India, because of that dominance against Australia recently and their form away from home, is pretty consistent. I'm tipping them to have their nose in front, but they're coming off the back of, it's strange, they're coming off the back of an IPL. Player like Ajinkya Rahane has been included into the Indian squad. He's had a fantastic IPL series. It comes in to replace after 18 months of missing out on Test cricket. There's some obvious omissions. I guess Jasmine Bumrah, Rishabh Pant, who's well known to Australian fans, won't be playing. However, I still think that they have the talent and the depth to play. And I mean, I haven't seen pictures of the Oval. I mean, I've seen photos online. It's unique to play a game this early in the summer at the Oval. Generally, it's played at the back end of a Test series. It looks like there's a bit of grass on it. India have gone over with their three spinners that had so much success against Australia, not only with the ball, but with the bat, the likes of Akshar Patel, Rajinder Jadeja and Ashwin. So I think the team makeups are going to be interesting. I think Australia is pretty much locked in their top seven. You know, you'd be looking at Warner, Khawaja, Labuschagne, Smith, Head, Cameron Green, Carey, and Nathan Lyon will play the one spinner, and of course, Scotty Boland being added, just pipping Michael Nassu, whose form's been very good in county cricket. So I'm keen to see how India's makeup of their team is, whether they decide to go with two, one spinner, or potentially even three. I think two would be where they'll sit. And I think Jadeja's form with bat and ball, as well as Ashwin, will see them lengthen their tail. Given that they're coming off the IPL, I think that depth in batting lineup will help if they do get sent in. It's a bit green. They'll be able to counter punch at the back end of an inning. So it's going to be a fascinating watch and one that I'm glued to. It's a different sort of Test series. We've seen in the last a couple of weeks, we've seen England play Ireland in a four-day Test match and how aggressive they went about their cricket in that sense. This Test will be 5 days, but we'll have a spare day or a supplement day to make sure that there is a result. But of course, if it is a draw or a tie, Australia will retain the mace and be world number one. And not only that, they'll fill the coffers with, I think, about 2.7 million Australian dollars, which is incentive enough to play, I think.
Hamish Carton shared the sadness of Celtic fans as Ange departs.
There's disappointment there. There's a fair bit of sadness that it's ended after only not even 2 years. I think we would have hoped that we would have got at least 3 years out of Ange, but I think this opportunity was probably too big to turn down for him. Some fans are not 100% happy with Ange. They feel let down. That's just how people, I guess, deal with disappointment. Everyone deals with disappointment in their own way. Personally, for me, just a bit of sadness that it's over. But I think in time, we'll look back at it as being an amazing time.
Wally Masur ahead of the main event semi-final at the French Open as Djokovic and Alcaraz meet.
Look, on pure tennis right now on the clay court, I lean towards Alcaraz just from a tennis perspective. He's really hitting the heights. In the last couple of matches, he's been brilliant. But I just can't, you know, I've probably got PTSD like a lot of the players. You know, when you watch Novak, he just keeps delivering. He's got a mind like a steel trap. Doesn't seem to matter what's going on inside the lines or outside the court. He just finds a way. And he'll be unbelievably driven to beat Alcaraz. Because I think for Novak, you know, they might say records don't matter, but I think he would love nothing more than that 23rd Grand Slam title, because I can't see Rafa coming back after a year off. Obviously, Roger's departed, Andy's metallic. You know, he will have that all to himself, and that would be something.
And Wayne Hawks on the end of Singapore racing.
It's quite amazing, isn't it, really? I mean, you just put that into, you know, our terms here. The government says Randwick and Flemington are going, see you later. You got 18 months and get out. It's quite an amazing thing. Obviously, we don't have the land issue that they do in places like Singapore that are high density, but gee whiz, you'd think it's pretty sacred, wouldn't you, that the pass of the land. But it's, we've got to be a little bit careful in the racing industry, and I'll tell you why, because it was about 12, 18 months ago, and Shane Anderson, formerly of racing.com, now lives in Europe, and he said to me, he went to a world seminar, Jared, and he said, It was on betting for sport. He said there was not one mention of a horse race of any type, any animal, a greyhound, a trot, or a thoroughbred. So you know, we've been around for a long time, but we probably need to not be complacent and think that it mightn't, you know, time mightn't have passed us. But gee whiz, I mean, to see Singapore just say you've got, you know, literally you've got 18 months left and then it's game over, that's it's quite astonishing, really, isn't it?
And that's just a snapshot. The full program and all interviews are available through the Waitley podcast. Subscribe at sen.com.au.